Solomon, given wisdom as none other on the face of the earth. And he exercises that wisdom, God uses him, to demonstrate that human wisdom, at its very, very best, put to work in every area of life, is inadequate. It is unable to fit the bill, to make for adequate, successful living. It cannot do that at all. Thus, Solomon illustrates that over and over again in Ecclesiastes. Here in chapter 10, if we can, picking up, remember now the inadequacy and saying it a different way, that wisdom is very inadequate. When you really see it objectively, human wisdom is inadequate. In the same breath, it is very much needed. So on the one hand, it's very inadequate. On the other hand, you need it. Thus, and to exercise it. Now, Solomon is helping because he is king. He is king of Israel. And he knows what it's like to have people, to have power, to have authority, and to have people coming and going under the courts, whether it be the Oriental court, Eastern Oriental, whatever, all the different courts with all the potentates, with all the power, with all the politics. Got it all over the place. So he knows this. Now, thus he is helping the people to understand how to approach human authority and power and how to do so in the light of God, who is the power over all the powers. So, here in, if we can, in the God dealing with the courts and with the people and of the world, the king, don't be to say it, go back to chapter 8 for a moment. In chapter 8, picking up, please. In verse 2, 8 and verse 2. I counsel thee to keep the king's commandment, and that in regard to the oath of God, the loyalty. God has allowed people to be in great authority, and you should honor people that have great authority, as long as they're in it, you got to recognize that. Be not hasty thus to go out of his sight. Stand not in an evil thing, for he doeth whatsoever pleases him. So the one in authority has absolute freedom to do whatever they want. And therefore, what you want and may not want and don't want, you can't override what the authority wants because they can do whatever they want. Thus, in verse chapter 8, verse 3, do not rush in, do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence, his authority. Do not join any rebellion against him. He can do whatsoever he pleases. And you need to accept and understand that person is in power. However, no matter what, the way to handle the storms that exist, especially if you were in the Oriental or semi-Oriental courts or any court, but them in particular, you want to be able, in the midst of the storms that rile up by rulers, etc., then you want to be calm. Thus, chapter 10, and in verse 4. Chapter 10, and in verse 4. Going from that, with that understanding, chapter 10, verse 4. If the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, if, hypothetical, if the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee. Leave not thy place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. So, here is the spirit, the breath, the life of a ruler. And the ruler is in a place, and what the wise man says in chapter 9, going back, because each time you're tying together, chapter 9 and verse 17, the words of wise men are heard in quiet more than the cry of him that ruleth among fools. And so we shared in verse 17, the wise person speaking quietly is able to be heard and understood. A ruler shouting, trying to get help from fools is useless. The person in authority yelling, trying to get something out of somebody that can't give it, that's useless. Thus, over in chapter 8 and verse 4, if the ruler rise up against thee, and remember Solomon is helping the students, those that would listen to learn. And the reason is given for the rulers, and the end, I should say, no reason is given for the students, rulers yelling, complaint, why he's angry. Now, we don't know why, and it doesn't matter why. It doesn't matter any kind of situation where the ruler is all riled up, and the reason is not given. How does a wise person react or act? How do you act? Do not leave thy place. Don't do that. Stay put. Do not join any activity that furthers rebellion. Stay where you are. Why? Verse four, little reason, motive. For yielding pacifieth great offenses. And yielding to heal, to cure, softness, gentleness is the word, calmness, quietness is the word, wisdom. It is wisdom, it is wise to be quiet. For yielding pacifieth, the word pacify, to rest, to settle down, to sit comfortably, to put down. To leave somebody in quiet. Thus, yielding calmness, quietness, makes rest. It puts to rest great offenses. The word great is in the plural, means many, many, much, much, much offense, a sin, the offense, sin, to miss the mark, many sins, many faults, many mistakes. Thus, the end of verse 4, for the motive. Yielding, calmness, quietness, pacifieth, it puts to rest great, many, many mistakes, faults, sins, errors, missing the mark. It quiets them. So wisdom is going to, if you're smart, don't the people in power, in court, etc., they have authority. The key is stay calm, quiet, and it will put to rest all the anger of the ruler. Now, when you come, and keeping in mind now the calmness, quietness, outlives many storms. All kinds of things happen in life. Quietness and calmness is a great help amidst all kind of storms of passion. So, in the face of the world system, in the face of humans, looking at them all, their position, their power, their authority, which is exerted, can be exerted against you, God's order allows their power and authority, so you don't want to, God allows it, you know, Genesis 9, Romans 13, etc. God allows them to be in power. The nations were divided in Genesis 11, and God allowed all those nations to govern themselves, to be religious, all kinds of religions. God allowed that. And in the process, he split them all up, so that they would at least have some measure of handling their little world without complicating it in a big world. Thus, and the devil, of course, wants a big world altogether. So all of these subjects are known. All humans are subject to human failure and fault. And government as it is, all government, all power, if you're looking for it to be right, if you're looking for it to be fair, don't look too hard. Don't do that. You make a mistake looking for humans to be fair and equal and just. You should be very glad when they are. But understand, you're wrong in looking for it. Now, having that little bit in mind, God is always fair and God is always equal. It's interesting that we often would blame God indirectly or directly, knowingly or unknowingly. We blame God for not being fair, not understanding, not caring. We blame him. And yet, we commend humans and we expect out of them something. And when it comes to God, we just push him aside and understand that, and we don't understand God is very fair, always reasonable, always right, never wrong. Go with me over to Ezekiel 18. Ezekiel chapter 18. And in Ezekiel chapter 18, may I remind us, in the great Israel's complaint, you know, that God wasn't fair, and God will address the issue. And picking up, please, in thought, chapter 18, verse 25. Yet ye say, the way of the Lord is not equal, fair, even. Hear now, O house of Israel, is not my way equal? Are not your ways unequal? It isn't God who is unfair, it's humans who are unfair. They treat God unfairly, and they treat each other unfairly. And that's what they do. Chapter 18, picking up, please, in verse 29. Yet saith the house of Israel, the way of the Lord is not equal. O house of Israel, are not my ways equal? Are not your ways unequal? We to weigh, to regulate. God says, I always weigh everything properly. I always do everything right. One other place where you hear, chapter 33, it'll say it again, because that was their problem. Why would God allow Babylon? Why would God allow Jerusalem to be ruined by Nebuchadnezzar? Chapter 33. And picking up in verse 17. Yet the children of thy people say, the way of the Lord is not equal, but as for them, their way is not equal. When the righteous turneth from his righteousness and committeth iniquity, he shall die, even die thereby. In other words, a good guy goes wrong, you have that problem. On the other hand, verse 19, but if the wicked turn from his wickedness and do that which is lawful and right, he shall live thereby. The bad guy gets right. Verse 20, yet ye say, the way of the Lord is not equal. O ye house of Israel, I will judge you, every one after his ways, and God does. Their ways are not God's ways. God's ways are higher than the heavens. And God's wonderful, wonderful working in Christ Jesus, our Lord, for believers, is always just. Always just. God, if you receive the Lord Jesus Christ as your Savior, when isn't God fair with you? When isn't God right with you? When is God partial with you over somebody else? God isn't. God is consistently who he is in you. When you look to God and understand God's fairness and equalness in dealing with your life, it overflows, and you're going to be fair and equal with others. And you're not going to get upset with people that are unfair, a system that is unequal. You're not going to get upset with it because you expect it, and you're glad for anything that comes out even halfway decent. You thank God someone was kind, polite, courteous. Thank you. Thank you. Now, chapter 10, if I can. And we're children, we're sons, and we ought to exercise and enjoy that. Chapter 10, you have a new subsection. And you'll notice it with the little words in verse 5, 10 and 5, there is, and that begins another section. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and an error which proceedeth from the ruler. There is an evil that I have seen. Remember now, you're comparing fools, foolishness and wisdom. And here is Solomon looking and said, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun. There is an error which proceeds from a ruler. And thus proceeding, coming out from the ruler, the error, the careless, inadvertent, and by the way, the word ruler, interestingly enough, the word ruler, for whatever it's worth to you, has to do to say, I'm going to say it, from the face of the caused to have power, the ruler, from the face of the one caused to have power. That's translated, means ruler. The face of the one who has power. Ruler. It's easy to say ruler. Ruler. Now, in verse 5, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun. Now, under the sun is the key for the next statement. I have seen something that is an error, that is an evil, careless, inadvertent. It just happens. People don't willfully do it all the time. They just make mistakes and do errors, have error. Now, verse 6, with the light of the fact, under the sun, verse 5, verse 6, folly, foolishness, remember we shared it last time again, foolish, to act foolishly, to pervert, to turn away from the true, a truth, turn away from the true end of something, the true purpose of something, and our English word that fits, which is stupid. Foolish, stupid. Folly is set in great dignity. Folly is set in great dignity. And in the process of being set, put in place, a fool is set in place in high places, in great dignity. Fools have been placed in high places, great dignity. Folly, foolishness, is put in the place of great dignity, power, position. And the rich sit in a low place. So here in great dignity, which is in many high places, many high elevation, social, political, fools are found in many positions of power. Fools set themselves up in positions of authority. That's what they do. And the foolish end up ruling and running things. The second part of verse 6, and the rich sit in low places, low, sitting in a status, in their condition, in their power. They're sitting down low as far as the community goes. They aren't in a high position, they're in a low position. The rich sit in low, important people, important in society. They sit, they dwell, they occupy positions and social status, their power is nothing. Their power is changed. They sit in low. They ought to be up where they understand, and they're put down where it's rather low. Thus, folly, foolishness, the positions. Verse 7. Remember now, it's comparing. It's going to go through. And what? When you're all done looking at life, and there's ups and there's downs and there's all kinds of things, keeping in mind chapter 9 and verse 18, remember you're looking at the unfolding of 9:18. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroyeth much good. You can have a whole lot of good, a whole lot of plan, a whole lot of wisdom, a whole lot of everything, and one little thing can louse it all up. Can change the whole ball game. So careful, so exact, so everything. All of a sudden it's gone. Now, with that in mind, because as you're giving illustrations, and then we'll put it together, if we can. Picking up, please, in chapter 10 and in verse 7. Verse 7. I have seen servants upon horses, slaves is the word. I have seen slaves, and slaves don't ride horses. They don't do that, not when the princes and rulers are there. I have seen servants, slaves upon horses, and princes walking as slaves, servants, upon the earth. The very reverse. The whole thing is upside down. I have seen servants, slaves on horses, princes walking like slaves on foot. That's what I've seen. I've seen that. It's society, the way it works. It isn't equal. It isn't fair. It seems to be upside down and inside out. When you try to figure it all out, the mismanagement of life by humans. Thus, in verse 8, in other words, you want to bear everything quietly. Life is like this. So if you get all huffy and puffy all over the place, you'll wear yourself out. It's what it is. Calm, quiet, relax. Otherwise, you're going to go all over. Thus, chapter 10 continues. Chapter 10 and in verse 8. He that diggeth the pit shall fall into it. And what is true now, you're going to give physical illustrations. What is true physically in these illustrations is true in other areas of life. And therefore, do not be eager to rush forth, to challenge, to exchange, to fix, to amend. Count to 50. Count to 150. Count. Because things are what they do, people do, humans. So don't be too quick. Be slow, be slow. And thus, remember now, a small thing we shared in chapter 9, verse 18, a small thing can destroy something very big. And so there's all kinds of occupations that people have working. There's all kinds of problems with people having occupations, all kinds of dangers they face. And thus in verse 8, the person that is digging a pit, can fall into it. He can fall into the pit that you're digging. You don't mean to do it. You didn't intend to do it. It just could happen. You're digging a pit. And if you got a big pit you're digging, and you fall in, it's easy to fall in, you know, just make a little mistake. And in you go. Verse 8. Whoso breaketh a hedge, second illustration. Whoso breaketh the hedge, the person that is breaking. Think of a road and walls on the road, stone walls on the road, and the stone walls are there, and guarding the field or the fencing it off. And people that go in to break up a wall, break up a hedge, break up a barrier. When you do that, you're moving these stones, as it were, the wall. Well, what's the problem? Verse 8. A serpent shall bite him. And inside, you've seen, if you've been in a wall or been anywhere, you know that different kinds of life exist in walls, from snakes to bugs to spiders. And you're going to go and take the wall down. In the process of taking the wall down, you didn't mean to get bit. And the snake bit you. The snake was there. You didn't catch the snake. You didn't see the snake. Verse 9. If I can. Whoso removeth stones shall be hurt therewith. The person that removes stones, causes stone to pull, to lift up stones, to carry stones, like in a stone quarry. They built, Israel was noted for stone. That's why they built all the buildings, the stone, stone, stone. Move stone, like the Egyptians moved stone, pyramids. And in verse 9, whoso removeth stones shall be hurt therewith. And the person that is going to remove a stone can be hurt by the stones. They hurt themselves in all kinds of different ways. They can get hurt in moving the stones. Drop it on your toe, drop it on your foot, hernia, whatever. All kinds of things. Everything. You do the normal jobs, but the normal jobs, you can get in trouble with the normal jobs. Person up in the lift trying to fix the wire up there, you know, and anything could happen up there, and who knows what could happen. Any job, no matter what you do, simplest job. You know, you're walking down the stairs to get something and you fall down the stairs. You didn't intend to fall. You just fell. Wow. So here in verse 9, whoso removeth stones shall be hurt therewith. And thus, secondly, number four, he that cleaveth wood, cutting woods, stripping logs, splitting logs, any kind of wood, any kind of tree. Verse 9, the person cleaving wood shall be endangered to take a risk, you know, thereby is going to take a risk. It's taking care. In other words, you're in danger. You're going to do whatever you're doing. And it's easy, unfortunately, to make an error, to have a mishap. And cutting wood, simply job, physical jobs. And boy, can you get in trouble, let alone any other kind of job. Thus, chapter 10, picking up, if I can, in verse 10. If the iron be blunt, now here's two conditional clauses, one positive, one negative. Verse 10, if the iron be blunt, remember now we're looking for the advantage, and folly, foolishness endangers, to say, remember, something small can ruin something good. Foolishness can endanger, put in danger wisdom. You do everything as wisely as you can, and unexpectedly, uninterrupted, you don't plan it, and there something can happen, and foolishness can ruin the whole thing. One mishap, one mistake, one false move, you know. You're doing something, and then you just don't pay attention for a minute, and the next thing, you're off balance, and down you go. You were doing everything good, and then you weren't paying attention, and you took a move, and down you went. Wow. How easy it is. How easy. Thus, if iron be blunt, and he do not wet the edge, so here is a piece of iron, an iron tool, casting tool, cutting tool, cutting instrument. And if he do not wet the edge, in other words, to sharpen, to be swift, to be go to and fro, to sharpen it. If you have something that's dull, you're using an axe, you're using a blade that's dull, and it isn't sharp, verse 10, then must he put to more strength? How much more work is it to cut when the thing is dull? Trying to cut the tree, cut the log. Sharp axe, easier. Dull axe, boy, a lot of more oomph has to go into it. You see? Now, hang on to that, because that's going to move us, that thought. But, the end of verse 10, but wisdom is profitable to direct. Now the word direct means to be successful, to have advantage, to act wisely. Wisdom is the successfulness is wisdom. Wisdom gives lasting benefit, lasting advantage. But wisdom is profitable to direct for success, for success. It gives the advantage, profitable, profitable. And thus to be made successful. Wisdom is successful. It gives success, it gives profit, it makes things work, makes things work. Wisdom is an effectual tool which brings good results. It brings good results. But be wary, be cautious in dealing with it. Why? Because your very best wisdom that you do, your best cooking, your best caring, your best driving, your best whatever it is, can all go down the tubes in a moment, and you didn't plan it at all. Did the best you could. And you didn't plan. Thus, wisdom is an effectual tool. But it's a good thing. But the trouble is it doesn't work well. Now it doesn't work well. Now the illustration to help you with that. Verse 11. And you'll notice, surely the serpent will bite without enchantment. Surely the serpent, the snake, remember you had the word snake in verse 8. A snake, a serpent will bite him. Now in verse 11, you're ending the section. Surely the serpent, the snake, will bite without enchantment. The snake will bite you. Now the word enchantment, has to do with whispering, charming, humming, uttering gentle sounds, a magical muttering, like a snake's charmer would do. Now hold your finger here and go over to Jeremiah chapter 8. Jeremiah and chapter 8. And in chapter 8, picking up, please, 8 and verse 17. Behold, said God, 8 and 17, Jeremiah. Behold, I will send serpents, snakes, cockatrices among you, which will not be charmed, and they shall bite you, saith the Lord. They're not going to be charmed. You're going to try to subdue the snakes that will bite you. And you're going to try to subdue it and control it, to put it under your influence. The snake charmer, the music, the charming, the sound, the movement, to get the snake to look like it's cooperating. Got that? Now back over. Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Verse 11. Surely, most surely, the snake, the serpent, is going to bite you without the enchantment. In other words, if you're going to go and you're an enchanter, you're going to try to control the charmer controls the snake. And you're going to try to control the snake, influence the snake, keep the snake in your control. Wisdom, the secret of wisdom is to have control. Control. Wisdom, I know what I'm doing. I have control. All right, now. Surely the serpent will bite without enchantment from. In other words, you're going to go. And the serpent is going to, without charming, before being charmed, before being controlled, before being under the influence, in the absence of being controlled, the snake decides to bite you. It bites you. Now, and when that happens, what have you done? Well, you wanted to control, but before you could control the snake bit you. Now, the end of verse 11. A babbler is no better. A babbler, someone who master, who controls snakes. A person who controls snakes, a charmer. A person who controls snakes. The tongue. There's no lasting benefit. What was the benefit of being, trying to control, if you're trying to control the snake, and before you can get the snake under control, it bites you? What benefit do you have? You've already been bitten. You didn't control the snake. The snake bit you, huh? The snake got you. You were why? Doing everything, and you lost. You lost, you see. All of your skills, all of your wisdom is of no use whatsoever, is it? All that you did was to no value. You've tried to control it, you tried to make it work, you tried to do it, and it ended up biting you. And it didn't make any difference anymore how wise you were or what a good charmer you were. You were bitten. You were bitten by the problem. You didn't know, you didn't think, you didn't understand. Thus, in light of that, the worthlessness of all human wisdom at its very best in its skill, the workmanship, the very things we do are always attended by dangers and the unexpected. No matter what we do, no matter how we cut the cookie, it's always there. And which can make, when it happens, it can make all of our best efforts fall flat on the face, you know. Think of building a blocks, you know, or anything you like, a little game, and you build the blocks up carefully, or you make the dominoes all line up, you know, the little thing you do, and you line the dominoes up, and you're going to go and give them a little push when you're all done, and they're all going to go like this, follow each other. What a fun time, you know, you line them all up, and you've lined them up, and you've lined, there's 5,000, and you've got 4,999 all lined up, right? Almost, and you're lining them all up, and you're ready to have someone come in and watch the display, right? And as you put down the 5,000, it falls, and they all go, and no one can see it, because it all is gone. It's all gone. It's all over. All you did is one lousy domino at the end, and it was one mistake. It took out the whole thing. Removed the whole thing. In one shot, it all went. So no one can come in, you know, and see what you've done, see how you would do it. Thus, the unexpected. And it can make for endure injury, can make it all worthless. What advantage is there? What advantage is there with wisdom under such circumstances, since we don't control? What advantage is it? Well, it's a rhetorical question, and there is no advantage. Dull. The iron is dull. The axe, the blade is dull. It isn't sharp. And so all the wisdom in the world, until you sharpen the blade, all the wisdom of the world doesn't stop the need to have to work very hard to cut the wood because the axe is dull. No matter what wisdom you have, until you sharpen the axe, it isn't going to go anywhere. It isn't going to work. No, none of it's going to work out. Thus, back over in chapter 10, remember, in chapter 10 and in verse 10, but wisdom is profitable to direct, and the little verb to direct, to cause, to be straight, pleasing, successful, to carry on rightly, to have the great advantage, to be able to pursue, to be in the pursuit of wisdom, to be able to be successful when you're all done with all of that. Wisdom's influence cannot override the snake that bit you. The snake bit you. You may be the best in the world, but the snake bit you, and all of your action and all of your wisdom is no good anymore. Nope. Things happen, uncertainty, events, eventualities, and they become worthless because human wisdom did not understand the uncertainties of life. By the way, verse 11 is the last attack Solomon makes. Solomon has been attacking it from chapter 1. Human wisdom will not suffice. Human wisdom, when you do everything in every single area of life, it does not pass the test. It does not do the job. All of the education, and education doesn't make you wise. Doesn't make you wise. And knowledge, having knowledge doesn't mean you have good use of knowledge, which is wisdom. So here is the last section Solomon does, and then he goes on to other things now. But from chapter 1 to chapter 10, verse 11, he attacked the prince. Understand, wisdom, human wisdom will never work. And that's what he's just finished. Human wisdom cannot work. Why? Over with me, over in the knowledge, if you would. Over to chapter 9, remember. Chapter 9. You cannot work out your life, human living, and do so, then you're in control. Go back to that. Wisdom, the snake, the charmer. We want to control. That's what wisdom wants. What's the purpose of wisdom? To control. To be able to have it, to manage it well. Control. And thus, my dear friends, what? Well, all of the living you have, all of the living we have, no matter what we have, is not in our control. It's not in our control. Your physical body, illustration you use, your physical body is all functioning wonderfully well, marvelously, automatically wonderful. But you know, you are not in control of the body's functioning right now, are you? You aren't in control at all. Bacteria, everything's going on, doing what it does, and you don't control it. We don't control life. And we think with wisdom we can control life and manage it and control it. But you can't. The unexpected, the best job you do, you're in danger of something. The airplane, the car, the bus, the food. Who knows? We don't. So we're looking. What are we going to do? What's the point, Solomon? Well, Solomon says, listen, I hope you don't get tied up in wisdom. If you're thinking wisdom is going to work, your way of controlling, you don't control. You don't control. God controls, but you don't control at all. Chapter 9 and verse 11. Remember now, I returned and I saw under the sun on planet Earth that the race is not to the swift, fastest guy doesn't always come out. The battle to the strong, the greatest, strongest warrior doesn't win. Neither yet bread to the wise man can be very good and starve. Nor yet riches to men of understanding, great understanding, and they don't win out, and someone that doesn't wins, rich. Yet, nor yet favor to men of skill, great favor, great advantage. No, nothing comes out. You'd think it all would sound like the snake charmer should always win and everyone should win and everything should be in their control. But it isn't. It isn't. Thus, the critical, wonderful end of verse 11. But time and chance happeneth, befalls, a person encounters, meets up with, time and chance happeneth to the one, to everybody. And you don't control time, and you don't control chance, the unexpected. You don't control it. So what do? You look to God. You look to God. And if you don't equate, remember, don't equate, you want safety, security, because we just read all the things that could happen to remind us all the things that could happen all over the place. What do we want? We want safety and security. And in the process of that, we don't want to mix up, lose the identity of what God would do and what we do. Self-sufficiency, being self-sufficient, self-confident, is not the same as biblical assurance. Not the same. People feel, I'm very good, I have peace about this. Not God's peace, your own peace. Your own peace, your own thing that you feel you've got in control. And that is not what biblical assurance is. Biblical assurance, you remember, biblical assurance is related to biblical security. And you know you're trusting God. You're trusting this great security and wonderment of God. And of all that the Father giveth me, John 6, 1, I will what? I will lose nothing. God, the Spirit of God, which we've been looking at, he's the absolute indispensable person. And that's the trouble. He is very rarely ever, ever honored in church or out. Really, really. And that's the problem. Because you can't have God's kind of work apart from God doing it. And the Spirit of God's ministry, you have to recognize it. Thus, the Spirit of God's wonderful, wonderful ministry is to go and seal and lock in everything that happens in your life so that no matter what happens in your life, Ephesians 1:13, you are sealed unto the day of redemption. So you're in the envelope. You're in the envelope. And God said, all things can happen. All things work together for good. I'm never going to lose you. So we aren't worried about falling into a pit. We aren't worried about a snake bite. We aren't worried about any stone, hernias, anything. We're resting in the only security and the only surety, the only certainty you have isn't in life because you don't control it, is in God who gets you through the thick and thin of it. Huh? That's where it is. Solomon, are we getting your message? Are you trying to tell us something? He said, I am. I'm trying to get you to understand what most people don't even ever get close to. They think that they can manage life and work and home, family, and you don't. You don't do that. God does that. Anyway, thank you for that. I hope you got a little bit. Thank you.